Okay, so I just, before we move on, I want to just put some names to some of the shitot yesterday, right? I said the achronim, but it's probably good to pin them down a little bit. So if you remember, what? Meaning that was why I just said, like, once we outlined the shitot, I said there are shitot, but now I'll pin the names down. So if you remember, one of the questions that we dealt with toch gidei, and maybe it's better just to put it straight this way, is does ein mavirin al mitzvot apply even when the Torah established an order for mitzvot? So as we said, according to Rabbeinu Tam, according to Rashi, it sounds like, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it sounds like yes, right? Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, the way he understands the Gemara is that if you were to pack your tefillin wrong, such that, you know, let's say you have it in the canister, and that you would end up touching the shel rosh first, so you would have to put the shel rosh on the side because you have to follow the pesukim, but that would be an ein ma'avirin. Right, so if you follow Rabbeinu Tam's logic, it sounds like ein ma'avirin is true even when the Torah tells you that you're supposed to be ma'avir. So I said that that's a little bit complicated. So I said that some achronim, and it's really the Radbaz who says this, who isn't willing to buy that at all. Right? He says that fundamentally you can't say that ein ma'avirin applies when the Torah tells you that's the order you're supposed to do it in. So it must be it's something like ein ma'avirin, sort of like ein ma'avir, and I'll just and this is the Radbaz in Shud HaRadbaz Chilak Aleph Tavkov Chatet. I'll just read you his lines, and he says, "V'ilav the mistafina hava mina de'ein bekan ma'avir al mitzvot." If I weren't afraid to say this, now this is rabbinic language, right? You asked me before about lefiyani udati, right? Lefiyani udati, which literally means, in my humble opinion, what it really means is I have a chiddush, right? I have something novel to say, and that's why I preface it with. So lulei de mistafina is if I weren't afraid, I would say, which means I really, really think this is right. But, you know, you're an important person, so I can't just say that without acknowledging that I'm saying something that might entail like chutzpah or something like that. But he says, Kevin shu mechuyav likshur shaliyat chila adayin lo egiyaz man shal rosh ad shenich shaliyat. Since you're obligated to put on the yad and then the rosh, it's as if the time hasn't even come to put on the shal rosh because you haven't put on the shal yad. So what does it mean that Rabbeinu Tam says ein ma'avir? And I know shuke ein ma'avir al mitzvot. It's sort of like ein ma'avir. And that was what we said as a strong possibility of Rabbeinu Tam yesterday. This seems to be what Rabbeinu Yerucham says as well. Rabbeinu Yerucham is a Provençal Rishon, if you remember. And he phrases it as follows. V'myaniach betik shel yad chila, if you put it in the wrong way in the bag, so valen shel rosh yimtsa miyag sheyirtzel anichan shel rosh. So it turns out they want to take it, and you take the rosh first. V'yistarech la'aviron v'lito shel yad shetachtein, and you have to put the head on the side to get it. V'yekimo ma'avir al mitzvot. It'll be like ma'avir al mitzvot, which again supports this way that we were reading Rabbeinu Tam yesterday. And as I said, some of the achronim aren't so convinced of this, so the Gezei Yishai isn't so sure, because he said the simplest pshat in the Gemara is that if Rabbeinu Tam is reading it into the line, which about ein ma'avirin, sounds like ein ma'avirin pshuto kemashma'o, and therefore the Gezei Yishai isn't so convinced, and he says maybe it really is proper ein ma'avirin. Okay, so that just sort of plugs in some of the names on what we saw yesterday. Okay. I think this piece here on page 10 is helpful from Rav Asher Weiss. Now we noted that there's a few different ways of understanding ein ma'avirin, right? It could be that ein ma'avirin it's a bizui mitzvah, it degrades the mitzvah. It could be that it's as the way the Radbaz puts it, based on the Rambam and the Pinchas Mishnayot, is that you're not supposed to calculate mitzvot. But it's important to know that I'm not sure that calculation one really works in all cases. Why? Because there's three types of ein ma'avir and al mitzvah that we know of in halacha. The one where calculation does work is case A, which is ein ma'avir in between two mitzvot. Right? So if you look at page Yud, Rav Asher summarizes the three different kinds, but I think this is important. Right, b'shtei mitzvot. So which case was shtei mitzvot? When do we say ein ma'avir al mitzvot by shtei mitzvot? The case in Yoma, no, that's not two mitzvot. That's... it's by two mitzvot. Which do you do first? The cleaning out of the mizbeach or the hatavat hanirot? Remember, that depends on the geography, the physical placement of the kelim in the mikdash. That was in Yom Lamed Gimel. So that type of ein ma'avir al mitzvot, I think you could go either way. You could say either the reason that you have to do the mitzvah that you hit first is because otherwise it's degrading, or because you're not supposed to calculate the relative worth of mitzvot. But the other two types, I'm not sure. So the case that we have of the mincha of the mincha ha'omer, it's not about two different mitzvot. It's one mitzvah. What is it about? The makom ha-mitzvah, right? That sometimes ein ma'avirin is you shouldn't give up on using this field and doing the mitzvah here, and rather wait to do it there or something like that. Then I think it's harder to say it's about calculation, because you're not making a statement, right? You're not calculating, you're not assessing, oh, the field on a mekachula is, you know, more ra'oi than the one on sneer, right? You're not saying that, right? Like you're saying you're giving up an opportunity to perform a mitzvah. So that, I think you have to go more in the direction of using mitzvah. So it could be that there's really tzvedinim, right? That some of the implications of and the applications of ein ma'avirin al mitzvot are about this issur to calculate mitzvot. That's maybe by two mitzvot, but when we're talking about the one of, you know, two opportunities, you know, I think you must go much more into the realm of bizui mitzvah. The third type of ein ma'avirin al mitzvot is time, which is similar. This was actually a case, I don't think we did this one. But the Gemara in Megillah Daf Vav quotes the position of quotes Machlokes of Rilazar Berbiosi and Rishon Ben Gamliel as to whether you should, when you have a leap year, whether you should read Megillah in either Aleph or either Sheni, either Rishon or either Sheni. You know, the argument to do it in either Rishon is that's brought in the Gemara is Ein Ma'avirin al Mitzvah, that you're giving up on a potential Adar. The argument that we have is that no, the Adar in which you read the Megillah is the one which is Samachin Geulah Geulah, is the one which is Samach to Nisan, because then you have the miracles being celebrated consecutively. But again, that's not really...
You just say there is a mitzvah of Megillah in the first Adar, and you still think it says... Well, the mitzvah only comes
about... Oh, for sure. So I think that's going to be the... Right, remember we said that in a lot of these you can say that the Machlokes Gemara is whether we hold of Ein Ma'avir al Mitzvot in general or whether it applies here. I think the reason that that sheet will say it's not Ein Ma'avir al Mitzvot is Chazal instituted Purim when they did. And I think that's the response in the Gemara, not, you know. But I think, again, that type of Ein Ma'avir al Mitzvot, it's very hard to say that it's about calculating. No one's calculating that the first Adar or the second Adar is more holy. They're just giving up an opportunity. Then I think you do have to say that at least one of the reasons is bizui mitzvah to explain that type. Okay, and that's the case in Megillah. Now he, Rav Asher also quotes this Avnei Nezer, who has a huge chiddush, that the Mishnah Shechal Shabbat Beinoi Gimel Sukkot Chayim Medina Livnot HaSukkot Lefnei Shabbat. So this is something we really didn't get into. But there's a machlokas in the Achronim whether Ein Ma'avir al Mitzvot, as we've talked about, is really like Zvizin, right? Where, you know, it just do things earlier. Or is it only in giving up an opportunity? So within that, the Avnei Nezer has the following Chiddush, which is, let's say, Yom Kippur is on, for illustrative purposes, is on Thursday, okay? So then he says, you are chayav to build the sukkah on before Shabbos. Why? Because the normal time to build a sukkah is after Yom Kippur, right? But since you can't build on Shabbos, if you don't build it before Shabbos, it's as if you gave up on an opportunity, because there's a qualitative difference. Right, that there's like the period before Shabbos and the period after Shabbos. And he's mechadesh that ein ma'avir al mitzvah is whenever I give up an opportunity that's qualitative. So since Shabbos breaks it up, That is ein mavirin ala mitzvah. Now, Rav Asher Weiss does not understand this at all, because he says, for a few reasons. First of all, it's only asher mitzvah. Second of all, he says, maybe you could say ein mavirin is true in a case where the exclusion that divides up the two times is inherent to the mitzvah. But it's very hard to say, like, technically I can't build today. So, like, now, before Shabbos is Sukkah building time A, and after Shabbos is B. Like, Shabbos, I can't build. There's nothing to, it's not like a Sukkah thing. But he says what's clear is that the Adonizer very much believes that when there's two times, if you give up on one of the opportunities, that's Ein Mavir. And again, it's a huge Kiddush, because you could have just said, that's not right. That's not the type of thing we're talking about at all. Okay. One of the halachic issues that people talk about, and again, you know, at this point, like, I could read you summaries of Achronim from here, but I just felt we just need one day of sort of pinning down some of the issues, and, you know, might as well use the summary that they have, though if you have other questions, I do have other summaries. What about within one mitzvah? So, one of the shailas that comes up is, right, well, what would you say, right? If it's all about one mitzvah, and it's just about, like, physically doing ein ma'avir al mitzvah, like, with it, do you have to, like, literally use the first object that you have? What if there's a reason not to? So, some of the Achronim say that, based on Tosfos, that if there's one mitzvah, if it's one big mitzvah, then there's no problem with ein ma'avirin. Especially right, the ein ma'avirin might only be, remember what Tosfos said, is that if I'm planning on doing both, right, so then it might be ein ma'avirin, right? You don't jump to the second and the first. But if I'm planning on only using one and there's a reason to prioritize one over the other, that's not ein ma'avirin. So for example, when you cut the challah, right, the kolbo, you know, you can look along, but we'll run through. The kolbo writes that the minhag is to use the, that some people have the minhag to cut the bottom challah. And other people have the minhag to use to cut the top challah, if you're only cutting one.
What if there's
on the side of the challah? Oh, good gosh. And whatever, there are Kabbalistic reasons to doing the tachtam. The other Kabbalists say you should do the top, the Arizal, the Kavach Chaim. I don't want to get too much into that. And the Rashba writes in general that you only need to cut one. And the Rashba already writes that some people have the minhag to cut the bottom one, and other people have the top one. Okay. Some say you should do both. That's what the Rokeach says. But the Bach says, how are you allowed to cut the bottom challah? Isn't that ein ma'avirin ala mitzvah? Right? So you clearly say that, how does the Bach conceptualize it? That even if it's one mitzvah and you're only using one, even if there's a reason to prioritize, you have to use the first object you're poget, right? He basically takes what we learned by Karban HaOmer and extrapolates it to everything. But some of the other Achronim say, what are you talking about? The reason that by, let's say, the Omer, it's Ein Ma'avir Ala Mitzvah, if I skip a field, is because there's no priority. There's no reason to use field A over field B. So if I give up on field A, that's Ein Ma'avir. But if you have a reason within one mitzvah to use an object, to use object A other than object B, so then it's one mitzvah. So you're not, like, degrading one mitzvah in favor of another mitzvah. And you're not just skipping on an opportunity capriciously. You're skipping on an opportunity because the other one is better. And it's internal to the mitzvah. And we've already seen that that's the type of thing that is legitimate. And therefore the Tosefet Shabbat says, I don't understand. It's all, you're not planning on cutting both. If you're planning on cutting both and you skip the top one for the second, maybe that's sort of like the Omer. But if you're planning on cutting one, and you have some Kabbalistic reason, or whatever reason, to cut the bottom one. So then do that. Like, what's the... Right, so he argues that within one mitzvah, When you're giving up on an object within a mitzvah for a reason, for no reason, we already know from the Omer that that's a problem. Right? We already know that's a problem. Because I'm giving up on this field. But if it's one mitzvah and I'm giving up on the top challah because of the second challah because I have a reason, so that, he says, is fine. But others, the Chidah in the Birkei Yosef says, and the Yom Shel Shlomo say, no. The Bach is right. You know why the Bach is right? Because of the Omer case. So the question is really, what do you learn from the Omer case? Right? One way of reading our case is that what you learn from the Omer is that Ein Mavirin tells you that you always have to use the first object for the mitzvah that you come in contact with. Because otherwise that's considered giving up an opportunity. Right? That's the way the Bach reads it. And that's why he says you have to cut your top challah. Those who responded saying, no, you know what you learn from Omer? That if there's no reason to prioritize one object over the other and you choose to skip out on one opportunity, so that's a problem. But if there's a reason to prioritize using one object, right? Like, you know, forget Kabbalah for a second. Okay? Let's say you take the challah right off the, you know, you put the challah on the hot plate or you left it in the, you know, hot oven or whatever so it's warm. Whereas you have one challah that you're going to cut that's warm and one that's not. Now, sometimes you take it out of the oven and it's, you know, the oven should be off. If it's on, obviously, you're violating Yisurim on Shabbos. Meaning, you turn the oven off right before Shabbos. So sometimes it's actually hot. Right? But you want the challah to be as hot as possible. So what do? You bring it to the table. Right? If you put it on top, you might, like, burn your fingers. What do? You put it on the bottom and, like, you sort of, right, hold it at the edges. I don't know. Come up with a case. Right? So why are you cutting the one on the bottom? Because that's what you want. Why aren't you holding it on top? Because you'll burn your fingers, right? So what the Tosefet Shabbos would say, that's not a Mavir al mitzvot. It's one mitzvah. You have a reason to prioritize the other object. You're not like skipping. And what it comes down to is, what did you learn from the case of the Omer? Again, if you say you have to use the top challah like the Bach, so as the Chidah notes, where does he get that from? The Omer. Which is that even a single mitzvah, giving up the opportunity on the object of a mitzvah, that's a mavirin. That's a bizui in this object. But if you say that you're allowed to use the bottom challah, you should use the bottom challah, what you learn from Omer is that no, when there's no reason to prioritize one object or the other, so then, in achinami, you shouldn't give up an opportunity. But, if there's a reason, so then it's going to be fine. That's what I would have said, right? So I, you know, some of the Achronim really think that this is a machlokes, whether you say a mavirin within one mitzvah or not. I think it's a little bit more subtle, as I just said. Now, of course, if you want just to know the lahalacha on this particular issue, right, since we're just sort of, you know, wrapping things up, lahalacha, which challah do you cut? So it's a three-way machlokas. Top, bottom, or both. As we all know, Minhag HaGra, as I'm sure you've seen from Chaim Ozer, when he cuts the challah. I'm sure he does this, right? When he's here for Shabbos, he just cuts through both challahs.
He's done like one Shabbos. He does, you mean the little slit on the challah?
No. That when he cuts the challah, he cuts down through both. No? He doesn't?
He did one in Shabbos.
Okay, real hardcore Gronix. This is one of those, I must admit, as much as I have sometimes Minhagei Agra, and like, this is one of those that I'm just like, I'm not convinced that I'm like, you know, of any of the shitas so much that I cut through both. I tend to cut the top challah, but I don't really make a big deal of it.
What about the pre-cut?
No, you can't use pre-cut for Lacha Mishnah, you can't do it. That's a difference, right? That doesn't have to do with this. That has to do with whether you're speeding up the process. But honestly, does it speed up the process? But man, I don't do it because I don't think it speeds up the process. I don't think it's, you know, from what I've learned, the reason you do that cut is to speed up the process, right? To minimize the hefsek. But what I've seen in practice, and that's why I just don't do it, Lamaisa, you do it, fine. You don't do it. The reason I don't do it is because what I've seen most people, what happens? You do the little slit, then you put down the knife, and then what do people do? They delay longer trying to find the slit to cut into it. So, Mamanashach, if you spend extra time looking for the slit, then you've delayed more. If you don't ignore the slit and just cut, then what did you gain? Well, you didn't do anything. You just cut the call off. I just don't. All right.
So
don't sue me.
If you're not supposed to
sue me. Whatever.
If you're not supposed to delay, then I think we should use the knife.
Isn't that what you, I assume that's what you do, no, Yosef?
With the...
That you don't use a knife, probably, right? The standard Sephardi knife that I've seen is people just rip it up, no?
Depends on the call that we have.
Like, pull apart for sure, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. It's the one that already can be pulled apart. My dad pulls it.
I know some Sephardim have like a more of a Kabbalistic reason, right? They don't want knives on the table or knives on that challah, so they just tear it anyways. Okay, so there are a few interesting issues that he brings up. So, for example, one of the shaylas that people ask in this context is, what if you have a woman who has a mitzvah that she's chayevet in, and a mitzvah that she has man grama that she's not chayevet in, but she's going to do. Right? So, like, there are plenty of mitzvahs that she has man grama that women aren't technically obligated in, but they do, standardly. Like, blowing shofar, lulav, right? I think almost all women I've ever met who are shomer mitzvah try to hear the shofar. I think we go in order of what I've seen. Right? I think rove women who are shomer Torah mitzvahs, even though they're not chayav, try to hear the shofar. I think many, the less, try to take the lulav, and I think the number of, no? Do you think it is as common? I think it's pretty common for women to try to go to shul in Rosh Hashanah and hear the shofar. I think that's like universal.
Well, yeah, because they're already there, but also...
No, they come for the shofar. They're not because they're already there, they come for a shofar. That's why they have a women's shofar blowing after davening for people who couldn't make davening just to hear shofar.
At least less.
Right, at least some of them. 30, 40, whatever, something. Women try to come for shofar. This is like, even though they're not chayav, many women try to take the lulav. Less, I think, than shofar. Tefillin, I think, miyut shebemiyut. Because the Ramah says not to do it. I don't want to get political here. I'm just saying descriptively here, man. So, if the... but if, what's it called? So what if a woman has a mitzvah seishas from grandma that she's going to do, and a mitzvah that she's actually chayavit in? So would you think that there's ein mavir al mitzvah? Would you say?
So it's like the same case with a deraisa or derabanan.
Right. But, well, there we saw. I think it's the same. You're right. I think it's similar to that machlokas, deraisa and derabanan. That's what I would say. Right. And again, if it's about bizui, so maybe yes. If it's about calculating, probably no, because it's clear that the mitzvah she's chayevet in, she's more shayechet to than the one she's not. I think that's going to be the right answer. Another case. It's interesting. He quotes here a modern version of the Radbaz's Shaila. Again, today I'm just sort of wrapping some things up. But here in the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes a modern version of the Radbaz's Shaila. He says, you're right. Most people aren't asking you if I'm allowed out of prison one day a year. But a very routine Shaila is, what if I'm in the army and I can't be mekayem every mitzvah, I'm in the middle of things, and I have a certain number of days off, and I get to choose what day off I have? Right? Right? So here, right, that would be the modern version. Right? Is if my officer says, look, you know, we can afford for everybody to take a day off, you know, but like, when you're not off, we're in the middle of things, you're not going to be able to daven, right, whatever, right, which is mutter, right, whatever. It's legitimate. Should you try to arrange it the first day, or should you say, to take the Radbaz's case, Wednesday is Purim, let me take off Purim, right? And presumably, right, this comes down to the same machlokas, Radbaz and Chacham Tzvi, except which part?
You can also say that.
Except remember, in the end of the day, Chacham Tzvi was worried about missing out because they might lie to you. I don't think that would be true. The correct. So that aspect would not. Correct. So maybe you would say, well, in the end of the day, look, you know, if you're in the middle of a case where it's realistic that you might lose the opportunity because war will break out, so maybe you should just take the day now. Okay. So right? And that's what we saw in general. But I think it is interesting to say that is a modern version of it. We noted that some Gedalia Machlokas, right? We already did this. Here, maybe just look at the end, because this is something we talked about, but I think it's good to see a summary. One of the issues we had discussed several times, which is very lemaisa, is the bris milah case, right? Is it legitimate to move the bris later in the day to have more guests and stuff? So here, so if you look at the bottom on Yud Aleph over here, he quotes from the Yalkut Yosef, just halach lemaisa, says, "Yesh ladun b'misha rotz lamtin lamul b'no achar chatzar yom kedei shevo amrav v'yikayim b'rov amadrav melech and rashai lasut king." Are you allowed to do this? Oh, is the Shulchan Marachet, is that what you say? Is that what this is? Oh yeah, sorry. This is what you say. The current Sephardi chief rabbi. So he just quotes himself. So he says, So he said, this isn't Ein ma'avir al mitzvot, because you're not giving up on an opportunity. What is it? Zrizin. Very good. And as we've already said, by zrizin, there might be more room to give up on doing the mitzvah early in order to do it in a more beautiful way. And that I think, again, there are certain people who look. There are certain people who are very machbed on this. And really do their bris right in the morning. There was one Ram in Gush, or Mordechai Friedman. I mean, he's been a Ram forever. Meaning, he's been a Ram over 30 years. He was. That he is very makbed on two things. He is like one of the most halachic people I've ever met in my life. I love him. He tries to have all his brises of his sons at Vasikin. But he also is makbed. That what? That it's a Suda's mitzvah, and therefore what should you have a Suda's mitzvah? Meat. So he has like every bris at like 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning and like steak. Right? It's like, you know, it's two hakpados that, I'll be honest, I don't think they go together. But what?
Those must not be your favorite ones to attend.
I've never been to them. I know he does this. Look, I have been to Vasikin brises before. I have had them. I think of my kid, like I said, I think Ezra was Vasikin, but to be fair, it was Toronto, and like the sun rises, God knows what that is. Actually, no, it was March, so no, it wasn't so bad. But it was, the bris was, Shacharis was, I think, 6:30 was Vasikin. Something like that. It wasn't terrible, and people had to go to work anyways, so no, it wasn't so bad. What we were dreading is, right, I've said this before, right, trivia question, what is the worst day of the year to have a bris? This is not a halachic question, but mitzius. So Yom Kippur actually isn't so bad. You just don't have a suda. It's annoying, but you just don't have a suda. But, no, Tisha B'Av would be the same. L'dati, the worst day to have it is Erev Pesach.
Oh, right.
Right? Why? Because you have a suda, but it can't be matzah because it's Erev Pesach, so it has to be chametz. Right? But you need to burn it.
Yeah,
it's a nightmare. Like I had, so and I heard horror stories because there was a friend of ours in Toronto, like a friend of my in-laws, who had one of their sons had a bris on Erev Pesach. So what did they do? He said it ended up being he like ran around all the bagel stores to get the last bagels. Like he had to drive to every bagel store just to like scrape together like 30. He thought no one would come to their Pesach, but he was wrong because someone's offering you bagels not in your house on Erev Pesach. He's 150 people show up and are eating bagels in his house in Erev Pesach. I mean, can you imagine the nightmare? Like I was terrified of this. This is so. In the end, Ezra's bris was 3 days before Pesach. But like mamish, it was like mamish alak vol.
Not sort of like later.
With what? Later, you can't wash on anything. Oh no, you're supposed to have it the day of. Like you need a. Like I said, a lot of other ones you can do. Yom Kippur, you won't have a suda. Some Gedalia, whatever you do, you don't have a suda. You do it in the afternoon, right? You do it towards Shkia, and you have the suda at night, right? Which is what I did for my nephew, right? Whatever. But Erev Pesach is like a nightmare. It's like a mamish. It's crazy. Like even Pesach is annoying. Right? Pesach, you just get matzah. Okay, you know, it's annoying. There isn't. It's hard to get a caterer. So maybe you don't do a caterer. You know, you do some matzah and whatever. Okay, you do it. But like Erev Pesach, that you have to do chametz. It's like, mamish terrible. Mamish. So for Ezra's though, we did do the bris. Ala boker, mamash. But we didn't have meat at 7 in the morning.
You have meat on
Pesach. You can have meat on Pesach. But I'm saying, 7 in the morning, we had a bagels, you know, that's what you eat at that time of day. I don't know.
Bagels and lox.
Yeah, bagels, lox, whatever. I don't know. You know, of course, if it's 2020 and like all my friends were having brises with like 5 people on Zoom, right? Eat whatever you want, you know, make it festive for yourself. Ashrecha, Ashrecha. Keni Yiratzen. I give you a bracha that you should. If that's what you want, you should have a nice meat suit at your son's brises, right? Plural. Okay. What? No. You'll have lamb. Mahajin. What? I don't know. You're talking to the wrong person. I'm a vegetarian, right? Come on, I don't know. Whatever you want, okay? Ashrecha. Okay, good. Oh, thank you. That makes me feel so good. Fine. Okay. So those are some of them. Again, there are a lot of like other little issues that we can talk about in halacha, but we've really talked about a lot of them. I think we talked a little bit about the question of whether it's ma'akev b'diavad. So now we've talked about time, we've talked about place, we've talked about 2 different mitzvos, we've talked about different reasons for it, we've talked about in different variations of the Chacham Tzvi case, the Chacham Tzvi Radbaz case, the modern versions of it. We talked about the Tfilin cases, we talked about Talis and Tfilin. Just because they included it here, I do think it's nice to talk about some of the rationales for Zrizin, right? We talked about a little bit of Ein Ma'avir, and is it about, you know, you shouldn't calculate mitzvos, or is it Bizui? But we also talked about Zrizus, where we said that Zrizus, it does seem to be that, what's the rationale for Zrizin? So, as we said, there are some people who basically, and this is something we've seen over and over, that if you'd asked me, I would have said Zrizin is about showing excitement, and Shehuyei Mitzvah is that you might miss it. But as I said, there are some Achronim who equate these. So if you look, for example, the Chavos Yair does this in a way that I really find not compelling at all. The Chavos Yair thinks that Zrizin is like Shehuyei Mitzvah, but specifically, if you look, he says the Zrizin Magdimen, Lefiyon Yedaiti, the Tam, Pet Yomur Adif. The Esher Shazeu Tam, the Zrizin Magdimen. The Chavos Yair is so willing to equate all these categories that he thinks the reason for Zrizin Magdimen is you might die. You might die. The Tam Pen Yomut Adif. That you might die.
You might die.
Die. That if you don't do the bris at 6 in the morning, we're worried you might die by 8. Now, if you ask me, is that compelling for Zrizin? I think that might be similar to Shehuyei Mitzvah. Right, you might lose the opportunity entirely, remember? The Shehuyei Mitzvah. But to say that that's the reason of Zrizin Magdimen, I find to be...
Say you may die from not doing it?
No, not die from not doing it. You might die before you get a chance to do it, if you wait the hour.
Oh.
I find that to be very, very, very stretching it.
That's different from that. Meaning, Shehuyei Mitzvah is, if you have the opportunity...
Correct. I would have said Shehuyei...
Because...
Right, so Shehuyei Mitzvah, I would have said that's what it's like. I would say it's really, I find that very, very not compelling for Zrizin. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch, he says, maybe Shatam Gudishuli Panui Min HaMitzvah. He gives an interesting svara, and he says, based on the Magen Avraham, that maybe the reason is that you don't want to be free of mitzvah. Meaning that you want as much of your life to be filled up with mitzvot as possible. So if you can do a mitzvah now, do it. Because otherwise, you're giving up on time.
Just to make sure, when we read this for the first time, we found a weird yamot, maybe that you would die from it.
That you might die before you get a chance to do it.
Before you get a chance to do it.
No.
We instead decided to say it was days.
I was here. You should have asked me. No, come on. The Magen Avraham's rationale is, and this, again, I'm not totally convinced, but it makes some more sense than the Chavos Yair's, is that the reason for its reason, Magdimin, is that, you know, you don't ever want to have your time empty of mitzvot. Again, I would have just tell you the reason is because it shows excitement. That's self-justifying, right? Like, it shows excitement. You want to show excitement in mitzvot. He notes that it's possible that similar to a mavir on mitzvot, which is you might lose the opportunity, which again is a less extreme form of saying with the Chavos Yair. So for this reason, so far we have you might die. It's similar to a mavir, which is you might lose or shiur mitzvah, you might lose the opportunity, which is not as extreme as the Chavos Yair. To fill up your time with mitzvot, which is Magen Avraham, which okay. I would have just said, and this is what is simpler in like Rav Chaim Valaji, that no, there's just a value to doing mitzvah happily with excitement, and part of that is doing it as quickly as you can. So if you look here, he writes a few points. So he says, right, you get Olam Haba, you're Mekabel Pnei Hashchina, or you get Arichos Yomim, and that's the Midrash Rabbah that you were looking at. But if you look at Ted, he says, Hazariz b'mitzvah, yishol schar al azrizuz v'simchaz ha-mitzvah, zulam meikar ha-mitzvah. And this is, I think, the direction. He says, you get schar for the fact that you did it quickly, the fact that you do it happily. Right? It sounds like that's itself, that's valuable. Okay. Now, but if you actually look at what he says himself, he actually says maybe the reason you get Arichos Yomim is because, and this is, again, I don't really agree with this, but he says, if you think the Chavos Yair is right, the reason for Zrizin Magdimin is you might die, then maybe that's why you get to live long if you do Zrizin Magdimin, because you were constantly worried you might die, so God, me that can I get me, that makes you don't die. Again, I don't find this compelling. What?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, I don't, yeah. Again, you could say it's similar to Ein Mavir or Shuye Mitzvah. I'm not so opposed to it. In the Silas Yisharim, the Ruchal says the same thing. He says, good, so what does he say? Right, he says that what's the reason for his reason is that you might just lose an opportunity. Right, he says, so again, you have the extreme, which is you might die, a less extreme, which is the Magen Avraham, which is the Mishilas Yisharim, which is you might lose the opportunity. Again, you know, maybe it's you're giving up an opportunity, but again, I just think it's, you know, I don't know why they're saying all this. Or Magen Avraham is that the reason Magdimin is you want to fill your time with mitzvot. Again, I would have said the simple reason for this is you want to show excitement. Shuye mitzvahs, you might miss it. Ein Mavir is you're giving up an opportunity. The reason is just, right? Pshuto k'mashmao, do it with alacrity. We want you to do mitzvah with brisk cheerfulness. If you remember that. By the end of this, you better not forget that English word. If nothing else, if I've taught you nothing in this sugya, I've taught you the word alacrity. What? With a C, yeah. Yeah. Alacrity. Alacrity. Now, if you just turn to the last page, what's the difference between saying, like Rav Asher Weiss, that Zrizin is completely different from Ein Ma'aviren? Right, that Ein Ma'aviren is about giving up an opportunity, and Zrizin is about, you know, just showing excitement? Or going in the direction of some of these Achronim, that Zrizin is similar to Ein Ma'aviren? That in a certain sense, even doing it more quickly is about not giving up an opportunity or the like. So I think Rav Huttner captures it nicely. So you look at the last page, he says, what's the difference? He says, so just look where the first arrow is. He says, Mitoch dikto kadvarim anu lemedim chidush gadol betovana shal midos hazrizos. From the fact that some of the Achronim, right, learn out Zrizos from Ein Mavirin and Ein Machmitzin, right, Mitzvah Shabbaliyot Chal Tachmitzeno, that implies that Chisaron Hazrizos Bavod Hashem Uvikim HaMitzvot Ein Perushor Sheishkan Heder HaMala Shal Zrizos. Right, what this really hangs on is, do you think that not doing something quickly is just a lack of a positive, or do you think it's a negative? The more you equate it with Ein Mavirin, the more you think that doing mitzvah without Zrizos is actually is a negative. You've given up on something. And that's what he says. Sheish kan kilkul chiyuvi. It's a positive messing up. Hamafzit shlemut shorada shal masa mitzvah. Sha'arei hishvu chachamim kiyum mitzvah b'lizvili isra muchmetzah v'pesach. Because it's like chametz. Now again, how would you respond to Rav Huttner's philosophical claim? By saying, no, that's the difference between Ein Mavirin and Zrizin. Zrizin is a positive, showing a saving. Ein Mavirin is a negative. By equating it, he says that a lack of Zrizos is itself a problem. So look at paragraph Bet. He says, "V'gidron shel dvarim kachu." He says, "L'tfiyat tvisa regila." And you know, there's a reason. Me iruda tnuah shel kochor anefesh kochor aguf. I know dov machmar alachat zeat chak shartzon lochitza kochor lo zigit chepsel b'tkifu. He said most people understand Zrizut the way I still understand it, which is that Zrizut means you do things quickly, you feel the pressure, the desire to do it. V'hetim l'tvisa zeh in shum evdel b'mutah shel midat hazvidut bein shiba b'inyanei avoda bein shiba b'inyanei olam. The ikra evdel ubaratzon. If that's the case, you could have Zrizut for Hashem, you could have Zrizut for everything else. You could have Zrizut for mitzvah, you could have Zrizut for anything else. It's just a question of attitude. And therefore, if you have the attitude for mitzvah, great, but Zrizut as a quality could be applied to anything. And for sure there'd be no difference between mitzvot that are on non-Jews or on Jews. But in paragraph 3 it says, but he thinks it's not true. And he points to this interesting Gemara. The Gemara in Erevin says that if we didn't have the Torah, we would learn sniut from a cat, the gezel minimala, and not stealing from ants or assiduous workers. V'arayot miyona, derech eretz mitarnagol. So he says, Ari yishlanu kan rishima shal kama chovod ha'adam v'avodat barosh anu motzim rishuman gam beteva ha'bal chai. So you see all these, you know, natural things that we learn even from animals. And he says, why don't you say that we learn not to be lazy, Zrizus, from ants who are such assiduous workers? Why do we learn Gezel? So therefore, he's Mechadesh, Ilmolin in the Torah, Loinu, Lemedim, Mimena, Midazo, Hareshish, Mimena, Zrizus, Gorum, Shin, is Chadesh, Dafka, Matan, Tarvaylach. Because he thinks Zrizus isn't just excitement, it's something unique that the Torah gave. And what is it? So he suggests, if we skip down a little bit, that so he, you know, he goes on with this very philosophical direction, and he says maybe what it is that what we learn from how we left Mitzrayim is that we are above time, and therefore he says, if you skip the chet, elenu eifo b'dinu kiyish lach v'lemida zridut eifo v'eifo b'diyuta tachtona shilish amine b'eifo tiv ich alachat haratzon lasiget shalom yurut gifut. He said at one level Zrizut is just about excitement, but he said maybe what Zrizut really is you try to do it as quickly as possible because we're like above time, which is what we learned in Mitzrayim. Right, that we left the chipazon. Okay, I don't know what to really do with it. It's an interesting philosophical idea. Okay, so I think that is all I want to do on these. There is more, but like I said, I thought this packet was a fair summary of a lot of it, and as we said at the beginning, we were specifically using these Makarot because the packets were put together by the Olamot website, which is funded and the brainchild of Tzvi Reisman, who is sick, and they asked to daven for his refuah. So we said that at the beginning. Are there any other issues, loose issues within it that you wanted to touch on that we hadn't in terms of Zrizos?
This one's Tzav versus Torah learning.
But that was by Oseg B'mitzvah. By Oseg B'mitzvah, Patrim and Mitzvah. I should just note that Tosfos takes it as a given that Ein Ma'avirin is only Lechatchila and not B'dieved. So whenever you have an Ein Ma'avirin Es Kalacha, that is Me'akev, right, that is even B'dieved, you need a special pasuk. Okay?
So you're saying something that's basically
that... So it's just Ein Ma'avirin, so the example really is the case in Zvachim by Shvichat Shiari Dam Chatos Apinimios, right, that the order is you're supposed to do, right, the pouring of the blood of the internal Chatos after sprinkling their blood on the Zbech HaPinimi. And the pasuk says, "Oh, you sowed him as be'ach Allah, asher pedach ol moed hu depaga reisha." So the Gemara gives two reasons, right? One is the pasuk, and the other is sort of ein ma'avirin. And it sounds like that if it weren't for the pasuk, so it would only be lechatchila that you should do that which you hit first. But once you have a pasuk, that's the order even b'diavad. And again, this is the simplest shot of Tosfos. Now, the Acharnim note is probably not possible. The Karban is whether you're Makayim the Mitzvah of Shichar Adam. Right? No one's going to say that if you pour the blood out in the wrong order, you didn't fulfill the Mitzvah of the Karban post facto. It's that the Mitzvah of pouring out the blood, you would not... fulfill, but again, Tosfos doesn't seem to think that's true. It seems to be that it is only lechatchila, and this does seem to be the general direction that the poskim take. We already talked about what if the Torah has a. Let me just see all the topics. Right, we talked about the relevance of makom hamitzvah, of zman hamitzvah, of two different mitzvos. We talked about some of these weird shittot of, qualitatively different times, like the Avni Nezer on Shabbos and Sukkah. There are variations of that are found in the Achronim. We talked about different versions of the Svaris, about Bizui Mitzvah, is it about you shouldn't be calculating the relative value of other mitzvot. We talked about, right, what if you only get a chance to be Mekayim one mitzvah? We talked about, again, the difference potentially between Shihuye mitzvah, Ein Ma'avirin, Zrizin Makdim, and Chaviva mitzvah, B'Shaita, and the like. We talked about the applications by Tfilin, and Tzitzis and Tfilin. We talked about some of the reasons for, philosophically for each of these mitzvahs. We talked about some of the applications of them, classic ones, the Betzias Apas, right, the bread on Shabbos. We talked about Bris Mila, is it legitimate to delay it? We talked about the classic machlokas of Kiddush Levana, right? Which is Hinder Mitzvah versus Reason. And we talked, maybe the last point I would just make, and I believe this was from Rav Asher Weiss. As we've seen, a lot of the postgame seem to assume that there are like formal rules, that always, either always Reason is over Hinder, or Hinder is always over Reason. It is possible that there's a bit of a sliding scale, right? That like, a long delay, right? Because remember, as we started with, Rav Asher Weiss thinks that a lot of these principles are really more Ratzon HaTorah. So it could be that once you're dealing with this sort of, less defined area of Ratzon HaTorah, it could be that it depends, right? If it's a really big improvement of Hinder Mitzvah for a few minutes of Zrizin, it might be Hinder Mitzvah comes first. But if it's a long delay for only a minor increase in Hinder, it might be Zrizin, right? So it could be that, unlike some of the poskim who assume that it's either always vizin comes first or always hitter comes first, it could be that it depends on how long the delay is, how big the addition is. And again, since we're dealing in the world of Ratzon HaTorah, it is plausible to understand that there is a bit of a sliding scale. Again, not all the poskim take it, but as we saw, a lot of the poskim consistently equate all these rules. You know, part of what's frustrating for me in this sugya is that I'm really convinced that Rav Asher Weiss is right. Right? Is that these are all different principles. Right? There's reasons about doing things more excitedly. Eimavirin is about not giving up opportunities. Shu'e mitzvah is about trying to make sure you don't lose the mitzvah entirely. And Chaviva mitzvah b'shaita is making sure you do the mitzvah in its primary time and not leaving it over to its makeup time. And that each of those are very, very different. But as we've seen consistently, many of the major poskim, this isn't like, you know, random shita here, shita there that equates it. Rashi seems to equate in certain places, right? Major poskim on Shulchan Aruch, major seem to equate them. Again, fundamentally, I do think he's right, but what can I do? Okay, with that, we'll move to the Omer tomorrow. So tomorrow, we're going to read the Psukim. And if you read the Psukim and really understand the Psukim, it's the Gemara. It's the Mishnah from Samech Chesem and Aleph to the Mishnah on Samech Chesem and Beis. Read all of it and make sure you understand it well, because we're going to be on that Gemara for a while, that Amud. Oh, right, I also put three Mishnayot. I want you to sort of get a bird's eye view of what the Omer does and what the Shtei Lechem does. So I gave you three Mishnah. So I have a source sheet ready for that. And I'll divide that up and we'll see how much we do inside in the post-game and how much we'll set up the main directions of the Gemara, and then I'll talk things out. Okay?